All right, so someone's going to have to explain something to me. Welcome to Cairo Nights. If I am involved in a hit and run, I mean, I'm just there. I didn't actually kill the person, but I'm just there. And then I take their car in order to get away from that crime. That would make me a criminal, correct? That would make me a pretty despicable human being. If I am in the act of theft, I get into a car accident, someone gets out to help us, and then they die, and then I steal their car, that's like a double theft, right? That should be indicative to whomever is prosecuting me that I am a bad apple. You could just say, one could infer from that that I'm not exactly the nicest guy if I'm willing to steal somebody's car and drive away with it as they lie dying in the street. This is one of the things that is so frustrating to me. I learned a long time ago that the kind of behavior that you tolerate in your life from anybody is the kind of behavior that you will tolerate from the world, if that makes sense. The kind of behavior that you tolerate from anybody in your life is the kind of behavior that you will tolerate from the world. And one of the things that I wish I could stress to the Seattle legal system, King County legal system, is to basically say this. When you tolerate that kind of behavior from your population, and when you say to people, oh, we'll just let this guy out on bail. I mean, what do you want us to do about it? When you tolerate that kind of behavior, that sends that out into the world. And so you allow other criminals to act in a similar way. King County, in a lot of ways, Seattle, in a lot of ways, is kind of like a gigantic kindergarten class. Where you have, I don't know how many hundreds and thousands of mentally ill people roaming the street. You have, I don't know how many hundreds, how many thousands of criminals roaming the street. And then you have a select handful of people that you have decided to try to corral all of that in. Again, it's kind of like a kindergarten class where you get, let's just say the kindergarten class is 90 kids. And you've got three teachers who are supposed to corral all of these kids into it. And then some of the kids get brass knuckles and knives and guns, and then others of the kids get loaded up on Red Bull and methamphetamine, and somehow these teachers are supposed to corral these students in and try to teach them. When you promote a culture, or when you allow a culture of crime, that is exactly what you get. The suspect who killed the officer last week, his name is Roger Lee Owens. He is 49 years old, and he was a no-show at his bail hearing. So this is for, you were at the scene of a crime, right? You were at the scene of a crime. You were actively stealing something, allegedly. And then you take the officer's car. You take Lexi Harris's vehicle, and then you drive away, and she's got her gun, and she's got her badge in there, and you drive away. Any judge who is worth their salt, any individual who is worth their salt would say, yeah, no, we gotta, this is not somebody who, this is not somebody who's worthy for bail. This is not somebody who's, we just gotta keep this guy locked up because this is like really, really bad. So the 49-year-old is no stranger to court proceedings. That is according to My Northwest. Prosecutors say that he has had 16 warrants since 1996. What more evidence do you need that this is a terrible, awful, bad human being? I don't know what more evidence that you need of this. So correct me if I'm wrong, but this is the kind of thing where it might get your hackles up a little bit. You might be saying, well, this is the kind of person that we want to be wary of, right? Specifically, I pulled up his record. This is not somebody who is, let us just say, this is not somebody who is a well-rounded individual. This is someone who's clearly, clearly, clearly mentally ill, potentially homicidal, potentially sociopathic, allegedly, right? Again, Roger Lee Owens, he is, according to his little profile, currently lives in Seattle, Washington. Aside from Seattle, he lives in other parts of Washington, including Renton, Edmonds. So Shane, he's right by you in Renton. He's previously lived in Atlanta, Georgia. In July of 2010, he met a homeless girl, then 14, and offered her to stay at a motel room that he had rented. He allegedly forced her to work as a prostitute so he could buy cocaine and pay rent on the motel room. They have the citations for this at the bottom of the page. This is really quite disgusting. Moving on, the teenage girl he took in July 2010 accused him of raping her while she was in a drug-induced haze. On September 21st, 2010, a nurse at an area hospital contacted the police department to report that the teenage girl had come in with injuries sustained during a rape. So, what we see here is kind of an episodic failure. On September 25th, 2010, the police department contacted him but did not arrest him. On December 13th, he was arrested and charged with promoting the commercial sexual abuse of a minor. On June 13th, 2021, we all know he allegedly stole the car of Seattle Police Department officer Alexandra Lexi Harris, who was fatally struck by another car while she was helping people involved in a three-car collision near South Forest Street in Seattle. So, on July 17th, he was arrested for investigation of a felony hit and run, theft of a motor vehicle, possession of stolen property, possession of a stolen firearm, and identity theft. So he was 49 years old when he was arrested on June 17th. So what do we know about this guy? Well, what we know about this guy is that because previously he was not appropriately incarcerated, because previously he was not appropriately charged, because previously, for one reason or another, you just kind of let somebody like this back out on the street, they can then live and fester within a community. This is what is so irritating about this, is that a person who decides, for one reason or another, to allegedly prostitute a 14-year-old girl is not somebody who you would want in your community, nor it would be something that you would facilitate within your community. However, when you make the decision to not prosecute crimes, when you make the decision to kind of bust crimes down from a felony to a misdemeanor, whatever it is, you promote crime within a community. That is just kind of the society that you begin to build. Like, you know, when I was a drug addict, I had tons of unhealthy people in my life. I had tons of them. You know, I had dealers, and I had fellow users, and I had, just unhealthy people, people who were facilitating my drug addiction, people who were trying to tell me that it was okay that I was a filthy drug addict, all this kind of stuff, right? When I decided to quit doing drugs, I cut all of those people out of my life, because the behavior that you tolerate towards yourself is the behavior that you will tolerate in the world at large. It's that simple. If I could give Seattle kind of a bit of a recommendation, that the behavior that you tolerate from your homeless population is the behavior that you will tolerate from your culture. It is the behavior that you will tolerate. And that is why someone in a moment of weakness and cowardice and in desperation, who is in the act of allegedly stealing a U-Haul, will then get into a woman's car and drive away, because that is what you facilitate. These things are not two separate events, you understand. These are very much so linked. Why would somebody think that if they got into a car and drove away that they would be fine? Why is that? Is a roll of the dice, or do you think that the guy was thinking to himself, well, you know, based on everything that I know about prosecutors and based on everything that I know about crime, I think it'll be okay. I think it'll be fine. I think that he thought to himself, you know what, I could probably get away with this. I could probably get away with this, no problem. So again, the crime here, according to prosecutors, is fleeing from the accident. Ultimately, the judge agreed with the prosecutor and set Owens' bail at $250,000 for the Harris case. She set bail at another $75,000 for a second case involving illegal possession of a firearm. The King County prosecutor has until Tuesday to decide whether or not to file charges. Okay, great. All right, wonderful. You wonder why people are leaving. And you wonder why people can't hang anymore, and you wonder why people can't handle it anymore. You know, you think about that dog that was killed a couple weeks ago, or you think about that little girl that was shot a couple months ago. You think about that other shooting that happened. I mean, it keeps adding up over and over and over and over again. And then people say to themselves, yeah, you know what? I just am not. If my city council is going to do nothing to try to back us up, if the mayor is going to do nothing to try to back us up, if the legal system is going to do nothing to back us up, why would I want to be here? Why would I want anything to do with this? It's funny, you know, last week we were talking about bad Democrat policies, right? It was bad Democrat policies. And I was saying, you know what, you can blame or you can point the finger at what's going on in Seattle and the surrounding areas on bad Democrat policies. Pretty clear, right? pretty clear to me. It's pretty clear as day. Take a look around. You see just mountains of homeless people. You see tremendous amounts of needles all over the place. You see people with the inability to go to parks. You read every other day about a park that may be swept or not swept, and some activist group coming out and saying, you can't sweep this. This is someone's property. You hear about SPD leaving in droves. This is the kind of culture that you promote within a community. This is what you tolerate, right? The city tolerates this kind of behavior in the same way that when I was a filthy drug addict, I tolerated the behavior of losers. Maybe that's the best way to put it. King County, Seattle at large, tolerates the behavior of losers, tolerates the behavior of criminals, tolerates the behavior of people who otherwise should not be here. Meaning an individual who is willing to prostitute a 14-year-old girl, allegedly, who then feels as if it is in his best interest to get into a car of a woman who's been hit by a car and drive away. You think about it again. This is the kind of culture that Seattle promotes. And I don't say that to irritate anybody. I don't say that to try to get it under, because we can change it. We can change this whole thing. We can kind of walk all of this back, but it takes courage to do so. It takes a lot of courage and it takes a lot of dedication. And the question that I ask myself is, do people have the courage and dedication to walk this all back and try to get your city back for you, or try to get your county back for you, or try to get your state back for you? Are you willing to try to take it back when it's time to vote? Are you willing to try to get it back in some way? I was looking at the list of mayoral candidates. And I was looking at, someone did a little bit of a write-up of, you know, who they thought was going to win and who they thought was going to succeed. And then, you know, My Northwest has had tons of information on who's getting the most funding. And I was thinking about this over the weekend, and I thought, this is just a recipe for repeating the same stuff. This is just a recipe for kind of doing the same stuff over and over and over again. And maybe we get this progressive guy in here, or maybe we get this progressive lady in here, and they're really going to fix the system because it's just a big racist system that caused this loser to steal this officer's car. She lay dying in the street. That's what it is. It's a racist system that determined all of this, determined that outcome. It's a racist system, as a matter of fact. You know, if that had happened to me, I'm just thinking about this, you know, if that had happened to my wife, or like the meaning that she got out of a car, was trying to help somebody, somebody hit her, killed her, and then the person who was in the act of crime got in her car and drove away, I'd be begging the prosecutor to just throw the book at the guy. I'd be begging. I'd be saying, can you do everything that you can to ensure that this human being never sees the light of day again? That this human being, in effect, right, contributed to the chaos of that situation. You think about it, that guy who, again, allegedly stole Lexi Harris's car, did he ever think to himself, man, I should go help that woman who was just hit by a car? I don't know, but do you think that he ever thought to himself, I should really get out of my car right now. I should really try to help that person, even though he was in the act of stealing the U-Haul, allegedly? Did he ever think to himself, I should probably stay here because this is a really... No, of course he didn't. Of course he didn't. He takes off. He leaves. He uses the tragedy and suffering of other human beings for his own personal benefit. What more could you possibly want to know that this is a bad actor, that this is a bad character? It's funny about this is that, you know, people will say, again, that all of the ills that we see in society is based on racism. You see this with Lori Lightfoot over the weekend. She came out and she said that the reason that Chicago is failing is due to systemic racism. And you say, okay, well, I will concede to you that there are certain structures out there, there are certain systems out there which contribute to racism in some way. I will totally grant you that. I will grant you that districting and the militarization of the police, I will grant you that. But I ask you this question. How does cultural racism contribute to a guy who steals a woman's car after she has been hit by another car? How does racism contribute to that? Make that make sense for me. Make that clear for me. Make it clear for me why a man chooses to prostitute a 14-year-old girl in a hotel room. Make that make sense for me. Because you can go around all you want pointing the finger at systemic racism, but at a certain point in time, you have to start holding people accountable for their decisions and their actions, right? Or am I crazy? Am I totally out of my mind by saying that? By saying at a certain point in time, you actually have to say, well, there are just awful, evil people out there in society. There are awful, evil people out there in society who do not care about other people, who do not care about their, they don't care about their city, they don't care about their county, they don't care about their community, they just don't care. They're just selfish individuals who are willing to take advantage of a circumstance where there's chaos and confusion and pain and suffering and death. And then what policies can we possibly have to try to fix that? There is no policy prescription for an evil human being other than prison. There is no policy prescription for someone who is willing to leave the scene of a crime where someone is suffering and dying. There is just no policy for that. How do you fix that? And it doesn't matter how much money you throw at the problem, and it doesn't matter how much you go around pointing the finger and saying systemic racism. At a certain point in time, the rubber meets the road, and you have to say, okay, well, there are just evil people out there. There are evil people out there who are willing to fire blindly into a crowd of people so that they hit a little 2-year-old girl. There are evil people out there who are willing to walk up to a dog and kick it so hard that it dies, and that there are evil people out there who are willing to leave the scene of a crime where a woman is dying. And if you don't have the courage to confront that, you don't belong in city politics. You don't belong in government. You just can't handle it at that point in time. You just can't handle it. And so when we think about all these things kind of in conjunction with each other, and we think about how all these things relate to each other, again, I will say the same thing that I said at the beginning of this segment, that the behavior that you tolerate is the same behavior that you tolerate from the world. That the way that you allow people to treat you is the way that you will allow the world to treat you. And right now, Seattle is allowing people to treat it very poorly. King County is allowing people to treat it very poorly. People who don't respect it. People who just don't care. And so, you can either try to remove those people, as I did many, many, many years ago, or people are just going to leave. They're just going to take off. We'll take a really quick break. When we get back, we're going to be getting into the whole debacle with the Seattle Black Pride event and the idea behind forcing white people to pay money to go to this event in reparations. We'll take a really quick break. We'll be right back after this. All right, welcome back to Cairo Nights. There's an article over at My Northwest from Jason Rand saying that the gay pride event in Seattle City Park is charging whites reparation fees. Now, before we get into this story, because it has been updated and there are many different conflicting reports as to what is going on, I sometimes wonder if I had a time machine and I could go back to, let us say, the 90s, and I could get some gay men and some gay women, or some trans men or some trans women from the 90s, and I could pick them up and then bring them to 2021, and I could show them this article. And I could show them what Twitter is, and they go, what's Twitter? And I go, it's this place where everybody hates each other, and they tell each other on a daily basis how much they hate each other. But that's not important, gay people from the past. What is important is this idea that now, in 2021, one of the things that we do at Pride events is we discriminate people based on race. Now, would those gay men, gay women, trans men, trans women from the 90s, from 30 years ago, do you think that they would be on the side of the people over at this Pride event? Or do you think that they would be on the side of, say, someone like me or Jason, where we say we don't think that people should be discriminated based on race? Whose side do you think that they would be on? They would be on our side, of course. So organizers for a Seattle Gay Pride parade say that they are charging white people as a reparations fee to attend. They have the support of Seattle City Council President and Mayoral Candidate Lorena Gonzalez and the Seattle Human Rights Commission, or at least they did. So they attempted to scrub that from their website. They attempted to take it down, to pretend as if that was not actually a thing. And Jason Rance was able to screen cap it. And I will read for you verbatim what it says. It says that All are free to attend. However, this is a black and brown, queer, trans-centered, prioritized, valued event. White allies and accomplices are welcome to attend, but will be charged a $10 to $50 reparations fee that will be used to keep this event free of cost for black and brown, trans, and queer communities. So, and then they say, please join us for our COVID-19 ball. Wow, sounds like a kid-friendly event, right? So, more importantly, this is something that I'm constantly thinking about, is at what point in time will people who are consider themselves to be leftists, or they consider themselves to be progressive individuals, at what point in time will they realize that they are stepping backwards culturally? At what point in time will they realize that the values that they espouse, that everyone fundamentally agrees with outside of some fringe racists out there or some ignorant individuals out there, that everyone deserves to be treated equally under the law, that there should be no disproportion when we see to treatment under the law? When will they see that their efforts to try to assuage whatever pain they feel have gotten to the point where they have become the very thing that they hate, that they hate this discriminatory, or that they've become this discriminatory body, which selectively persecutes individuals based on the color of their skin? The event is called Taking Black Pride, and it's hosted by Queer the Land, Trans Women of Color, Solidarity Network, and Alphabet Alliance of Color. It's supposed to be at Jimi Hendrix Park. And again, this is so disturbing to read. Jason goes on to point out in the article that according to Seattle Municipal Code 18.12.280, that it is unlawful for any person occupying or using any park or recreation facility for any event, activity, or exhibition open to the public, whether or not under a permit, and whether or not under an admission of entrance fee is charged, to deny any other person the full use and enjoyment of such a park and recreation facility because of race. And this is troubling. This is really troubling, again, because these people have become the thing that they very much so hate. And you can go and you can read the article, and there's a bunch of infighting, and there are people attempting to throw each other under the bus from the LGBTQI culture. And there are people who are saying, well, our event is even better than your event because our event is upholding black and brown trans women while your event is trying to oppress them. And there's all this kind of leftist infighting that we see. I would guess in so many ways that the people who are putting on these kinds of events in the way that they're putting them on, and just hear me out on this, in some ways are deeply mentally ill. Because how can you start from the premise that you want to have an open and inclusive event for gay men and gay women and trans men and trans women, which is a beautiful thing and a wonderful thing, where you invite people in and you say, we want people to experience all the shades and all the colors that our beautiful, multicultural, and diverse society has to offer. And then simultaneously you say, however, comma, if you fit within a certain melanin bracket, you owe us $10 to $50 so that we can actually fund the event in reparations. And this is what I mean by deeply mentally ill. How could you hold those two ideas in your head at the same time? How could you do that? And as someone who kind of goes out of his way to try to say, hey, everybody, let's be really nice to our gay friends out there. Let's be very kind and patient and empathetic to our trans friends out there. This is the kind of stuff that makes my job as a right-wing hack that much more difficult. Because some bigot out there, all they have to do is look at this article. All they have to do is go to Taking Black Pride and look at this screenshot, and then they have to, and then what they will do is they will use that as an example as to why they should not communicate with these people. And that's why it's an uphill battle for someone like me who wants to see a beautiful, inclusive, multicultural society. It is an uphill battle, because then how can I convince that person who looks at that piece that says, if you want to come in, you owe us 10 to 50 bucks if you're a white person? How could I possibly convince that person to live in a fair and just society at that point? I can't do it. See, so Taking Black Pride, they don't realize that the stuff that they put out there is fuel for someone like Richard Spencer, or it's fuel for someone like David Duke, or it's fuel for someone out there who is a transphobe or a homophobe or a racist. This is the kind of stuff that all those racist trolls out there live for. And this will be taken, and they will show it on their Facebook pages, or they will share it with their friends, or they'll send it around in some newsletter in their gross little neo-Nazi racist circle, and they'll spread it around, and people will read it, and they will go, yes, exactly, that is why we cannot be in league with the gays or the trans, because they are exclusionary, and they are actually the ones who are racist. This is the issue. And I go to my progressive friends and I try to say, listen, you guys really got to cut this kind of stuff out. You guys really have to cut this kind of language out, because you guys are giving all the right-wing trolls everything that they want in order to fulfill their nasty little agenda. And by being this defensive and by being this kind of prosecutory and by just being this disgusting, again, you are making it so just that much harder for someone like me who's trying to get people to be treated with kindness and empathy. You are making it that much harder for someone like me who's actually trying to do the work that you pretend to do by trying to convince people to treat you like a human being with dignity and kindness and respect. It makes it impossible for me. So anyway, we'll take a really quick break. When we get back, Shane and I are going to be doing a little bit of good news. We'll be right back after this. Welcome back to Cairo Nights. Shane, I've thrown my back out and I'm in excruciating pain, and I just want to start that off with the whole good news segment, which is that I am in, like, you know how they do the pain scale when you go to the hospital and you're like, one is you're in no pain and 10 is you're in the worst pain of your life?
Yeah. Where are you at?
I'm at like a solid 7.5 right now. I am miserable in every single way, shape, and form. So that is why we're going to do a little bit of good news, Shane Peterson, which is that there was finally a guy arrested for throwing rocks over I-90 in Seattle. So I want to say the I-90, but I've been told that nobody says that here. So, because, you know, as a native Californian, what we like to do is we say the 5, the 101. You know what I mean? You never say, or like the 90. We would never say Interstate 90. That's just ridiculous.
I always have just been, my whole family just goes by the number. They just say 85. 15,
right.
12.
Yeah.
That's all that I've learned, you know. They just hit me with all the numbers, and I'm like, great, I'll remember that with my good old dyslexic brain.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you take the 5 to the 101 to the 10 to the 110. I mean, it's like that bit from Saturday Night Live. But more importantly, Seattle State Patrol and Seattle Police have arrested a man for throwing things off of an overpass in Seattle. He was riding a bike with a headlamp, and he was arrested around 3 a.m. while throwing rocks over I-90. So, yep, there you go. He is in King County Jail for a felony. Hopefully he will not be let out or be given any bail. There has been more than 60 reported incidents happening along the same stretch of the I-5 and the I-90 in Seattle. At least 2 people were injured on June 3rd when someone threw rocks and other debris onto I-90. So when I think about this, I'm glad that they found the guy. I'm glad that they were able to arrest the guy. And I want this to be good news, but my concern is that they're going to be like, well, this is a mentally ill man who needs these kinds of services, and this guy doesn't get hit with any kind of charges, and they just kind of let him go, and or they put him somewhere, and he doesn't actually face repercussions for his crimes. I find this to be deeply concerning, Shane.
Yeah, I mean, I'm thankful that they finally caught somebody, because when I first heard the story, I was just thinking, like, okay, what type of person would be doing this? Because it's happened so much, it's not like a bunch of kids that are just being a bunch of goons going out there and having fun. Like, there's been serious stuff being thrown. Like, somebody threw the scooter off of the interstate. Like, that was absolutely ridiculous. Like, it's been hard to figure out what type of person would do this. And I mean, I'd be interesting if they finally, you know, get a good conviction on this guy and they can actually kind of figure out, like, what's going on between this dude's ears, because probably not a whole lot
right
of good.
Well, I think that all too often more kind of lefty people think that you know, that this is just some kind of behavior, abnormal behavior, comes out of nowhere, and that somehow we can fix this. when they fail to recognize that all too often there are just bad people out there, people who want to see other human beings suffer. I was watching Shane, what's that show that you introduced me to with the interviews with
the JCS psychologist?
Yes.
Yes, yeah. The crime psychologist, yep.
Yeah. So I watched the one where they interview that big old fat guy who killed that other guy who had no remorse. He had none whatsoever. He had he was sociopathic, and when the officer asked him, you know, why'd you do this? He said, I don't know. And they said, you know, can you tell us exactly what you did? And he went through the killing in a very methodical way. He later got off, you know, not guilty by reason of insanity, but he'll spend the rest of his life, rightfully so, locked up in mental care because he is that level of sociopath. I think we need to disabuse ourselves of the notion, Shane, that there are people out there who are redeemable or somehow they're fixable. I just think fundamentally that there are evil people out there who want to throw rocks over the overpass, who want to, you know, fire blindly into a crowd. And I know that sounds pessimistic, and I know that sounds awful, but my point is that if you can actually point it out and say, this person is beyond the scope of our help, the best we can do for them is to put them into a home, that is more compassionate, I think, than allowing that person back out in the street. Yeah, Shane?
Oh, I mean, yeah, you could say that. But also, I mean, you don't always have to look at it from like a mental health standpoint. You could also look at it as like the nurture and the way that this person was brought up, this person's background. If you look at that stuff on top of maybe a psychiatric evaluation, on top of maybe trying to figure out, okay, because the human brain is so complex, little things tick at each and individual time and make people do strange things. And yeah, you know, that person who was throwing those rocks off of probably is an evil, bad person. And I mean, I don't have much remorse for them for what they're going to get coming to them. But at the same time, I would love to really understand and try to put myself in his shoes and try to really just figure it out, if you get what I'm saying. I'm not necessarily looking for remorse. I'm just curious, really, what makes somebody go, oh, this is going to be fun or this is going to be dangerous. What circumstances in your life has led up to that point where you're going, hey, I'm going to throw a scooter off the freeway onto an oncoming car. Let's see what happens. Let's roll the dice.
I don't mean to laugh. I didn't laugh at the fact that somebody did that. I'm laughing at the way that Shane said that, because Shane said that, he said that in the most bro way possible. You sounded like a frat guy when you said that, and it tickled my funny bone, Shane. So I'm glad that this guy finally got caught, and hopefully they find now my understanding is that they believe that there are several people who are engaging this behavior. So my hope is that they will find the rest of this kind of cadre of criminals. And on that note, speaking of cadre of criminals, Chris Heinzelman will be coming in the next segment. He's our resident gun expert, and we're going to be talking about all the shootings that happened in Chicago, but also how we can talk about the Second Amendment and gun safety in a much more effective way. We'll take a really quick break. We'll be right back after this.